Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this morning. This is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a look at the politics involved in what's on your dinner plate. As always, I'm joined by my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Well, good morning.
And
don't worry, you're not going to get the second response yet. Ash will be with us in a few moments, I'm certain.
I want to point out for our listeners that Ashley, while being a registered nurse, also did a fair amount of time as an actress. And she enjoys being fashionably late for everything.
Yes. You know, in fact, every show that you've done starts with a funny story. In my life, the first time I ever missed an airplane was when I started early in our relationship, and Ashley had not lived in Los Angeles that long, and she visited a friend and said, "I'm on my way over to leave for the airport." She never got there. We missed the airplane. I said to her, asked her which way she went to my house, which was the beach, and of course, not knowing Los Angeles, she drove the long way around downtown and back around and got stuck in traffic. So, you know, when you live in Los Angeles, boy, you can lose time very, very quickly, which I know you've experienced, Simon.
Oh, indeed.
And that book is Good Morning, Ashley.
Good morning. How are you?
We're fine. We were abusing you.
You know, when I walked to the room and I heard it. I could hear the abuse from the other room.
Actually, you know, Barbara has a BS meter and Ashley has your talking about me meter, which incidentally also goes with actresses. You could be in another country and they will hear you talking about that.
That's right.
Well, wasn't there a really famous quote? I believe it's from Zsa Gabor. The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
That's right. They say it doesn't matter what they're saying as long as they're saying something.
You know, Zsa, unless, if you don't know, it's in very poor health and on death's door. And right now I'm not certain that she would agree with it because the gentleman she's been with for a long period of time, I think they're actually married these days, has turned this into such a zoo that it's upset everybody in Los Angeles.
It has. It really has. PR person's a very good friend of ours, and it really has been very upsetting.
Yeah, so everybody should take a moment and say some prayers for Zsa Gabor, who's doing it in that later period. And, of course, she's lived a very long time and a very rich and full life, which we all wish we'd led.
Right.
So,
okay, on with the program,
yeah.
Manny.
Yeah.
who have we got with us today?
Well, we have a wonderful guest, Barbara Peterson, who joined us a couple of weeks ago. And Barbara is here to discuss GMO foods, and we're going to discuss a little bit about what's happening abroad. But Barbara runs FarmWars.info. She's a retired California Department of Corrections officer. She lives in a small ranch in Oregon where she raises geese, chickens, horses, organic veggies, and practices what she preaches, sustainable farming. Her main focus is on educating people regarding the dangers of modern-day farming methods using the hazardous GMOs, the genetically modified organisms. And her website, FarmWars.info, has some of the best scientific explanations for GMOs I've seen. It rivals Jeffrey Smith, and I think it's something of value to everybody. She has short videos, slideshows that are really very helpful and educational. And Barbara's philosophy is almost the same as ours. It's time to step up to the plate and fight or lose it all without a whimper. And Barbara also advocates taking a stand against genetically modified foods and trying to make a difference in this world. So, Barbara, welcome to the show.
Well, it's good to be here.
Yes, I agree. We're just happy as can be to to talk to you about some of this. And as we start, to give a background to our listeners, I just want to run some numbers by, and then Barbara will discuss the numbers and discuss locations. And there was an annual industry-sponsored report from Friends of the Earth that revealed interesting information about the cultivation of GMOs around Europe. And they said, first of all, they're declining with an increasing number of national bans and decreasing numbers of the amount of acres dedicated to GMOs. There's a major report called Who Benefits from GM Crops, and revealed that less than 0.06%, that's less than about one-half of 1% of European fields are planted with GM crops. It's a decline of 23% in the last couple of years. And according to that report, seven member states uphold bans on Monsanto's GM corn because of the growing evidence of the negative environmental impacts. And we'll get to the health impacts, too. And then three countries have banned BASF GM potato due to health concerns. And I think Germany is the only one growing BASF GM potatoes right now. And then public opposition to the GMO food has risen to 61% Europe-wide. That means almost two out of three people in Europe are against GMOs. Even South Africa, which has been pro-GMO, has found negative impacts on farmers and the people in the environment, and they're taking action. So before we branch around the world, Barb, I know you have some experience with the European market, and can you tell us your reaction to those numbers?
Well, I'll tell you, I go to an excellent website, and it's gmocompass.org. That's gmo-compass. C-O-M-P-A-S-S.org, and it's a pro-GMO site, and they're very, very proud of it, and it's European, and they give you all of the statistics of exactly how many acres are being planted with GMOs and the percentages and everything, so you can get all that information directly off that site. And I'm showing here, it says the United States, as of 2008, the one half of the global area under cultivation is in the United States. And that's followed by Argentina, Brazil, India, Canada, Paraguay, and South Africa. So the countries that are already infested with the stuff, and I don't use that term lightly, are basically... I mean, how do you stop the contamination? You don't. So I am very, very happy that people are in other countries, because in the United States, we're through. We're lost with this stuff, in my opinion. Other countries are starting to stand up and say, hey, no, you know, I don't want this stuff. Let's try and get rid of it. And there was actually the Codex Alimentarius Commission. They had a meeting recently, and as a matter of fact, a few days ago. And what was going on there is there was something, it was a 20-year battle about GMO labeling, okay, with the United States standing as the in total opposition to any form of labeling. Well, finally, for some reason, and I'm very suspicious about that, the United States backed down and said, oh, okay, countries are now allowed to voluntarily label GMO, and they will not be sued by the World Trade Organization as a barrier to trade. Okay. Yeah, isn't that special? Isn't that nice of them?
Well, I think that's part of the embarrassment of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks exposed a variety of documents that caught the U.S. government trying to force both France and Spain to plant them, and they were very revealing and very disturbing. And since then, our government's been backpedaling a little bit, because particularly the French have been using that to really give the U.S. a bad time in the growing markets, because what they're trying to do is freeze out American participation, while the Americans, in turn, are trying to use the World Bank to threaten countries. The World Bank threatened Ireland, for example, that if they didn't use GMOs and lift their potential ban on it, that they would prevent them from getting loans. Well, when all of this leaked out from WikiLeaks, It really was very unattractive, and I think, Barbara, that's been a partial contributor to their change in position.
Yeah, you know, I agree. That sounds very, very logical, but what I'm looking for here is this is not over, because the United States is not going to back down on any form of voluntary or mandatory labeling. They simply don't want it at all. So what I'm looking to see happen is they're going to somehow change the labeling requirements or the definition of what is a GMO or something like that to somehow, you know, overcome this barrier, what they see as a barrier. So there's not, it's not over yet as far as the voluntary labeling thing goes. It's still a definitely uphill fight.
Oh, I
think I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If GMO is so good for us all, I'm genuinely surprised that the U.S. government isn't forcing labeling. You know, yes, this is the real meal deal. You know, we're using genuine GMO products in this can of baked beans.
Well, yeah, as soon as they get everybody brainwashed to the fact that they don't know that it was made in a lab and a fish gene is spliced into a broccoli or something like that, or you've got human genes going into, you know, cows, then if they hide that sufficiently, then maybe people will eat it. But at this point, if something is labeled GMO, hell, I'd rather eat dirt.
I agree. And surprisingly, Ashley has spent a great deal of time in their stores asking people their opinions of it. And Ashley, perhaps you can share with us your day-to-day experiences, what happens to people who you tell about GMOs who know nothing about it historically.
Well, the initial response is, oh, my God, I can't eat anything. And then, of course, you have to wean them off and go into, well, it's actually an organic food that you want to look at. You can do the exact same thing you're doing, except you want to eat organic, know your farmers, know the local growers. And the downside, the most upsetting to me, is to know that the fact that people are eating high pesticide food, because it requires so much pesticide once they start using the GMO on the farms, and it's causing the cancer, it's causing the problems, while people are running their doctors asking for drugs to help them get through their illnesses or have surgeries or whatever horror they have to go through, and all they have to do is cut the GMO out. But I also think, Barbara, I think that's part of the labeling. If they, Mandy, don't you think it's part of labeling? If they put the label on it, then it's sort of like putting a side effect on a drug. Mm-hmm. They are then going to have to take responsibility for all these tests that are coming back saying this will cause the liver damage, this will cause cancer, this will cause, you know, kidney damage, and there's going to be major lawsuits in this country.
Well, I think they're going to be anyway. There already is a major lawsuit, as we know, in New York over many of these issues. But, you know, Barbara, I find that education, as you point out so well and on your site, is the key. And every time someone joins this movement and they show up in a store and they say to somebody, do you know what you're eating? That's one step closer to a change. And that's all we can do. And this is what this show is about. And this is basically what I know you're about, is educating every American every way you possibly can, one at a time if necessary, until people wake up and realize what you're saying. And I wonder if you feel that. See, I feel that we're making progress. I think that people every day are looking at this issue in a different way than they have in the past. And that's all we can hope for, is that they just keep looking at this differently.
Yes, you know, I went shopping yesterday also, and when I go shopping, it's a once-a-month ordeal, and I go in there with my list, and I pack my cart because I only want to have one cart, and that thing is full to the brim because it's going to last me for a month. And I have actually at this point now, people are starting to recognize me in that store, and they will come up to me and they will look in my cart. This one woman, I actually had two people do this, and this one woman comes up as I'm packing all my stuff after I've finished paying and I'm packing it up, and she came right up to me and she looked in my car. She said, I just want to know what you're buying so much of. I said, well,
Yeah, you know, that's a wonderful thing. One of my favorite people that I have spoken to was way back early on when I was a little insecure about this can't really be happening. Why would the U.S. government allow this? Why would FDA approve this? And I was at a honey section, and I was looking for organic honey, because you don't think organic honey, how can they possibly use GMO in organic honey? So, or in honey itself. So there was a gentleman there who proceeded. I said, you know, my husband's out of a wheelchair. He dropped 100 pounds. He's doing so well, the doctors are now saying, no, I don't think he's going to die. You're going to have him a long time now. And here I am looking at this guy who proceeds to say, I had the same thing happen. He goes, I was on so many drugs that I was sick. I was also in a wheelchair. I could barely walk. He goes, look at me now. And he's like stepping around the store in front of the honey section. You know, we're like two goons together, showing me how well he's walking, how he's gone off all the drugs. He said, the doctor's very upset about this, though, he said, because he wants me to be on all these drugs. He said, but I stopped the drugs, and I'm not advocating that to people. But he got well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about drugs, my favorite story to add to that is, we've told the story a number of times how my best friend had a heart attack, and we finally got him to try the diet and go completely organic. So he stopped taking what is the statin drug? I think I don't remember.
Plavix.
It was Crestor.
Yeah.
And so anyway, make a long story short, he didn't want to tell his girlfriend, who was adamant about him following the doctor's orders. So he just did it on his own. He said, you know, I'm in an age where they're killing me anyway. What the heck? So he completely changes, and guess what? He immediately drops, I don't know, 20 pounds, 25 pounds, and his blood sugar goes down. And the doctor said to him, you're doing so well. I told you the statin drugs would work. And he said nothing for about 6 months, and finally he couldn't stand it because he thought he was being dishonest. And he told the doctor that he'd stopped taking it 6 months ago and was on our diet. And you know what the doctor told him? Oh, but you have to take Crestor anyway. You can't take a risk. I mean, it was like, me, I'm getting healthier, and you're now saying to me, you want me to continue to take this drug anyway, even though I've gotten healthy without it. And that's what disturbs me, is to a great extent, the doctors and other people have basically become a player in this game by perpetuating not only these myths, but the myths of the food pyramid, which are completely myths.
Barbara, can I ask a question? You did open the door, as the saying goes, about your trip to the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
You fill your cart up. What did you say to the lady? You know, what do you buy in the supermarket? Because and the reason I'm asking that is I live in a small town in Mississippi. My choices for shopping are severely limited. I use a regular supermarket rather than an organic supermarket. So what do you buy? What kinds of things do you look for when you're shopping?
Well, what I do is I look for the bulk section, and I read the labels, and then try and find stuff that doesn't say anything that I can't pronounce and can't recognize. So if I look at a label and it's like chopped tomatoes, it needs to be chopped tomatoes. And water or whatever liquid, that's it. That's all that's going to be in there for me. Buy staples, rice, beans, and I will stock up on those types of things. I'll also buy my salt, my baking sodas, and things like that I've either done previous research on the brands to find out how they're doing their stuff. I actually will call these places. Because I had, it's like with Western Family, I called because I had a box of powdered milk, and I wanted to know if the cows if I could use it for something, and if the cows were fed RBGH hormone. And when I talked to the gal, she said, well, we have absolutely no way of knowing because we have 35, it's a co-op, and we have 3,500 dairies contributing, so there's no way that we know if they use it. And I said, oh, okay, thank you. Well, in the trash the box goes. Actually, I was thinking of burning it so that it wouldn't pollute the landfill.
I come with you there, Barbara.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So when this woman, like, walked up to my cart, people ask me, you know, they'll make comments as I go by. It's like, oh, are you shopping for a restaurant? Well, no. And then I'll just take off wherever it goes. Like this lady, I said, well, you know, this is what I get. I'm doing food storage, and these are the staples, and I have my own garden, and I do my vegetables because of the added ingredients that are in our foods, the pesticide, the genetically modified stuff. And, you know, she was listening to it, and as she was listening to it, the person behind me was listening, and the checker was listening too. So I got a threefer there. And yeah, so it just, whatever, if they start getting glassy-eyed and then turn and walk away, then you've done your job. They've filled up, and that's the end of it, and you go on.
I love it. I agree with you. People just are surprised. They just don't know. And, of course, what bothers me is that we're in a generation where people don't read or study. So somebody has to spoon-feed them to them. And I've always joked that that's why Oprah became a big hit, is because she was willing to spoon-feed to the masses. And that's a sad commentary on where we are in this country. So
plus, it's a sad commentary on the school system.
Well, yes. Well, the school system, you know, you can blame the school system, but you really have to look at the fact that the Bush administration destroyed the school systems across the country, and there's No Child Left Behind turned out to be just a tragedy for the children, and that's a shame.
They should rename that one to No Child Allowed to Succeed.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we agreed completely.
You know, and every time I hear the Republicans arguing about this, it just drives me crazy. And by the way, in most instances, these issues address really large cities like Los Angeles, New York, and others. And when they talk about this, what they fail to say is that what's really going on is it's the inner city problem. The children are left behind, and the ones who are struggling with all these tests, for example, this whole new thing that came out in Atlanta where they found that they've been falsifying test results. These are all in the minority community. Anyone, all the, you know, what we have is what is called white flight. The more advantaged children go to private schools, which has skewed the test results. So suddenly you have a concentration of middle-class white children basically going to private schools who essentially score better on tests, which lower the test results of the minority community and therefore make them look even worse. So the other ones are getting advantaged teaching, so one thing sort of fuels the other, and it's very, very sad.
And the fueling actually goes even one step further for me, which is, now this is way out there, but it still isn't, the fact that the pesticides will lower the IQ. So you have lower income people being forced to eat food at the 99-cent store that are high amount of glyphosate and pesticides that absolutely lower the IQ. So now you have a lower income, lower IQ, and people now who cannot get funding for schools unless they cheat. Now, that's really a sad statement in America when we're all forced to go to the 99-cent store, have babies with lower IQ, and then it all, again, gets back to food and gets back to funding and gets back to governmental positions. So,
and, Barbara, that transitions us into an area that's a great interest to everybody, and that's the recent tests that show how GMOs are affecting people, both by leaving bacteria in the gut that have affected, you know, adults, but also this ongoing discussion about how they are affecting the fetuses. We wrote an entire chapter of our book devoted to that question of how GMOs affect the fetus of a pregnant woman and newborns. And so at the end of the day, when you have this kind of fast food issues that we've discussed for the last 20 years, I think it's affecting a generation. And I wonder if you have a feeling about that.
Well, I did the research, and I found out that the cauliflower mosaic virus, which is used as a promoter, in other words, it gets everything going in the genetically modified organisms. They put that in a what's called a plasmid, which is a portion of DNA, and then insert that into a plant cell with an agrobacterium. Now, that plasmid contains a marker gene, which is generally antibiotic resistance, and a stop sign telling everything when to stop producing the material, and they use generally cauliflower mosaic virus. That's like the start. That gets everything going because the virus is extremely invasive. Well, this cauliflower mosaic virus is something like 75% to 85% or 90% identical to the HIV and the hepatitis B viruses.
Right.
So say you have a person that has either the Hep B or the HIV, a partial virus in their system, and they eat genetically modified food. And this cauliflower mosaic virus combines with one of those other two to form a completely new type of virus. There has been no testing done that, and that is absolutely realistically possible for that to happen. So what's going to happen? We're going to see new diseases. We're going to see new effects. This stuff is not, it's been proven, it does not degrade completely in our guts.
That's right.
So what's happening is unpredictable.
I agree. Let's come back a step for our listeners. Basically, when you talk about a promoter, we're talking about a virus that's used to split the gene. There's an illusion when I talk to people that, oh, they just use a computer and they just split a gene and they do this and that. And I say to people all the time, do you understand how genes are split? And they go, no. Well, what happens is, and the reason why the cauliflower mosaic virus is used and other ones like it is because it takes a virus to penetrate the DNA because mm-hmm. other substances don't. So there's really no other way for them to penetrate the DNA other than using a virus. Well, the very thought that by inserting a virus, it alters the DNA is enough to make you pause. I mean, go think, well, wow, you're sticking a dangerous substance into another substance for the sole purpose of making a change. Wow. And that's where we are with it, is the minute you introduce anything, it becomes like a sci-fi movie. You know, what's going to happen? This is how we got Dr. Frankenstein and all the other books and warnings that have been issued for a long period of time by writers. Don't you agree?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, this is so unpredictable because they're looking at this like, and trying to get us to look at it like Tinker Toys, little building blocks. Okay, here's something and you remove one block and you just put this other block in and everything is exactly the same. That's not true. That can't possibly be true because the organism it's a complete organism. And when you do something so invasive to that organism, you don't know how it's going to react because not every organism is going to react the same way. They do not know exactly where these things are being placed inside the cells. They don't know. They can't know. And their test, their wonderful little test of if it's okay or not, you think they'd go through something, you know, wonderful. They'll take it in a lab and they'll test this. No. They grow a stand of this stuff and look at it and say, oh, looks okay to me. It's on the market.
Well, I think you can put it in everyday terms, terms that the man in the street can understand. Every year we have what is known as flu season. And there's all sorts of adverts on the TV, you know, get your flu vaccine, because every year's flu is different. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the flu virus is a GMO, and yet in some ways it is, because it's something that changes from year to year. No one knows exactly why. Some years it's way more serious than other years. We just don't know. Now, GMO is rather like creating the flu virus. Don't go tinkering with things because, you know, nature has a nasty habit of tinkering with itself to survive. I mean, we've seen that over and over and over again. You know, there are superbugs these days. Where do they come from? Well, it's because we've tinkered. And these, you know, minuscule, minute, cannot be seen by the human eye items have learned to survive in an adversarial condition. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Well, actually, I'd love to hear, Ash, this is something Ashley spends a lot of time on. It. Ashley, do you have any feelings? You were about to say something else about how these genes and stuff get to where they were.
Well, one of the things that I absolutely, Barbara, getting back to actually what both of you are saying, is that the fact that it's not, they only address it as AIDS and HIV. But it's illogical to think it's only can be assigned to AIDS and HIV when it's the RNA replication that is the same. It's the same that they're doing with that virus and what they're putting into the GMOs. But the pattern itself, because as you know from Dr. Mayho and Dr. Putzai and all these various doctors, they keep saying the same thing. It's going to mutate. It's going to create something new, and that's exactly what it has done. It has recombined. It'll recombine mm-hmm. within the body. It can take mm-hmm. viruses that you've had since childhood, which, of course, no studies are done in this United States for. You can get them done in Europe, but not here.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are recombining, and who knows what childhood awakening of a virus is now created because it's recombined within the gut, within the system, because the new virus absolutely wants to survive. It'll do mm-hmm. anything to survive. And there's no antibiotic for it, so good luck. And then a person goes to the doctor and says, Doc, I'm really, really sick. I'm really, really sick. Oh, let's send you over here to that specialist. Let's send you over there to that specialist. No tests are done. Because there's no way of knowing what this new virus is to run a test. There's no test existing. So you have a new mutation, a new virus, a new antibiotic resistance. You have all these new things happening while not labeling, because God knows there would be lawsuits nonstop in this country.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if I've told you about the experience that I had with my skin rash in regards to GMOs.
The you know what? The audience needs to hear it.
Okay, this is what happened. I was taking care of my elderly mother, and she liked her ice cream. She liked all of her processed foods and everything, and I just ate it along with her. And I didn't know a whole lot about GMOs. And all of a sudden, on her left calf, on the right, on the side, she developed this oozing sore that itched really bad, and she would just scratch and scratch and scratch. And I thought, well, it was a mosquito bite or something, and she's just scratching the heck out of it, and that's what's making it bad. Well, it got bigger and spread, and if you're familiar with what poison oak looks like, it was just this horrible, bubbly, blistery, oozy thing, and then it started spreading. So I said, oh, my goodness. So we went to the doc. The doc gave her antibiotics. Didn't help, got worse. So he gave her stronger antibiotics. Didn't help, got worse. So we went through all of the things. We went to a skin specialist. He took her through every kind of test you could possibly imagine. Fortunately, she had insurance. And he ended up giving her a tube saying, I don't know what it is, but try this. And it was a tube of vaginal fungus cream.
For how old was
okay.
she?
She was about, at this point, about 84. And I, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, well, so here we are, and I put this vaginal fungal cream on her, and, of course, it doesn't do any good. So now I'm going, okay, it's got to be in the diet. At least I knew that much. So I started eliminating a bunch of stuff from her diet, and then I got a goat. I started milking the goat and feeding her goat's milk, took her off regular milk, anything processed. She started getting better, and it cleared up. I said, oh, my goodness, well, I wasn't smart enough to do that for myself. I thought, oh, well, I must be immune. She may have an allergy or something. And then I got it. And I thought, oh, Lord, well, it's been too long. It can't be catching. What the heck is that? So I lost 40 pounds. I got scared to eat anything. I said, I know it's in the food. I know it's in the food. So I took myself off of all processed food, and I would start one thing at a time. I was eating raw vegetables and raw fruit and all that, and I'd start just one thing at a time. And then I'd eat sugar, which was not labeled pure cane. And if it's not pure cane, then it can be sugar beet sugar, which is genetically modified. And I'd start to get it. And then I'd eat something, and I'd start reading the label. It said genetically, you know, like corn. Okay, well, corn, I found out that most corn is genetically modified. And I found out that I did tons of experiments on myself. When I would eat something purposely that I was pretty sure was GMO, I'd start getting the little, you know, bursting bubbles again that would start itching, and I knew I was starting to get it. Then I'd stop, and it'd go away. So I pinpointed this to GMO foods, and I had to realize that I was going to have to completely change my diet, because this rash had gotten so bad, it climbed up my right leg, up to my thigh, all the way up to my shoulders, and down to my other leg. I was up all night, itching, scratching, miserable. Nothing would help. It was so bad that, you know, I didn't want to live like that. How can you live like that? That's ridiculous. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything, and I was scared to eat. And finally, I've got a handle on it now. I read every single label, get rid of every single thing GMO that I possibly can that I know about. And so far, it has not come back.
Can I ask a question? And I certainly mean no disrespect to the young ladies on the program. I'm 55 years old. And I'd say for the first 50 years of my life, I really didn't, you know, give a damn what I ate. If it tasted good, it was fair game. But I've noticed lately that, as in over the last couple of years, probably maybe 3 years, that some foods that used to never bother me a great deal now. I, you know, suddenly don't feel so good. I decide, oh, I think I'm gonna sit down or lay down, you know, watch TV. I just don't feel very good. Is this part of what's going on? You know, as our bodies get older, we become less tolerant to what we're consuming. I think, Manny, you talk about the enzyme bank. Is that the symptom that I'm facing?
Yes, I think all of it. What happens is our bodies change as we get older. Our bodies produce less enzymes than they do when you're born. So as time goes on, you don't have this bank of enzymes to constantly digest your food. And then you throw in not only the problems with GMOs, but MSG and all the rest of them. So your body now has a whole new line of food to digest that it's never really experienced before. So I think it taxes the body, it further drains enzymes quicker, and it leads to, among other things, colon cancer. And Ashley, you have some observations.
I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the intolerances, which we discuss, and the intolerance occurs from repeat, 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 which is repeating the same foods over and over till your body develops an immune allergic response where you absolutely cannot tolerate the food. Also, there are one of the things that happens, as we know, with GMO is at first they don't need as many pesticides. Then there are places that are using 7 to 8 times the amount of pesticides. Well, one of the things that they did studies on in Japan was a Roundup Ready poisoning. Roundup Ready is one of the things that's done with the GMOs. And symptoms are, and this may be some of your symptoms, and let's see if you fit into any of these categories. The first thing is that you have gastrointestinal problems, gastrointestinal pain. There may be vomiting involved. There may be nausea involved. You could have pneumonia. You could have excess fluid in the lungs. You have clouding that happens to consciousness. You have to lay down. And while this is going on, Simon, people don't realize there's actually destruction of the red blood cells occurring within the body. And similar things have been found within erosions of gastrointestinal tract. Well, gee, isn't that ulcers? Isn't that Crohn's? You have, you can actually have an abnormal electrocardiogram. So you have these things in addition to kidney damage. So with kidney damage, you're going to have problems throughout the entire body because the body works as a whole. So just from the Roundup Ready poisoning alone from the GMO, it's toxic. So you take that toxic ingredient, it's going into so many foods, including your soy, including your canola oil, and then when studies were done on the soy oil, they found that a lot of what's in the soy oil is the same thing that's used in pesticides. Well, that's 75% of your oil, 76% of your oil. That's in all of the food, along with the canola oil. So I think, Simon, part of it is, over the last 20 years, we're no longer eating natural nature foods. We're eating lab-created, let's go make money for whoever's producing it foods. And that's really the major event of what's making people sick.
Well, I agree with Ashley completely. And, Barbara, by the way, I fit into the same group you do. Our diet is essentially elimination diet, which was started first by Dr. Theron Randolph, who Ashley spent some time with early in her studies, and basically what you do is sit down, eliminate anything that makes you ill, and chart it every day. And one of the things we discuss in our books is how to chart your daily food consumption and your drug consumption, because I believe that what we call polypharmacy, taking more than two drugs, affects people more than four. All the tests show have a radical effect. So you get a senior like your mother, and we haven't asked her how many drugs she was taking, but I'll bet it was quite a few. So here she is taking a huge amount of prescription drugs and then adding genetically modified foods to what she was eating, which we find is a major contributor, as is people who go from chemotherapy to fast food places like McDonald's and eat. So, Ash, I know you had an observation.
Well, two things. First, when they go from chemo, which I've been at lunches with, oh, my gosh, I'm going on my way to chemo, where somebody is going to go to a restaurant filled with pesticides of this glyphosate we're talking about that's toxic. Toxic texts absolutely prove it. And when they're taking their drugs, what they don't understand, a recent study or a study that was done on generic drugs, which we're going to cover in a future show, and Barbara, you're welcome to come join us on that if you want. A recent study was done where they did side effects. Simon, hold on to your hat with this one. One or several of the drugs, I mean several of the drugs actually that they did this particular study on had over 500 side effects. The average drug has 60 to 70 side effects. Now you're going to take drugs that have these enormous side effects that are making people side effects sick, plus you're combining it with the GMO and these other events with the pesticides, you can't help but be sick.
Yeah, I don't think the human body was designed to absorb that many varieties of drugs. I'm sure, Barbara, you feel the same way because that's what happened to your body, right?
Oh, exactly. And my mother, quite interestingly enough, I had gotten her off of all the medication. They had her on a box of pills, which ended up putting her into the emergency room because that's when she started living with me because I was going to take care of her and not allow this to happen. And I started going to every doctor visit with her and then reading these pills, and I found out that on all but one of the pills she was taking, it was it said that this might cause constipation. Did they bother to address that? No, because she was older and it really didn't matter. So And that's basically what the doctors, you know, would say. Oh, she doesn't have to eat this or that. Oh, it doesn't matter. She's old. Let her eat what she wants. You know, and I said, well, of course, this guy's really looking out for her health. So I got her to my place, moved her out to Oregon, and got her off of these drugs. And I found out she was much more lucid. She was happier. She would have been dead shortly if she'd have remained on them. And then she lived for several more years after that. But I believe that there was a toxic buildup in her system that could possibly have exasperated this, or whatever that word is, this her reaction to the GMOs or the glyphosate and other pesticides that were on it, because your body can only take so much before it does something that you don't want it to do in reaction to it.
Absolutely.
In fact, that's a problem that I have repeatedly is, what I find happens, and you know, people laugh a little bit at this description, but the simple fact is, as we get older, our bodies get more and more like a child, and even more and more like an infant. Our bodies can't handle more; they handle less. So, as you get older, you more or less regress to where your body cannot handle all these different chemicals at a time, where they're telling you, "Oh, take more chemicals, take more drugs." And it doesn't matter because you're getting older. Well, really what they're saying is they're conceding you're going to die, and they don't really care what they're doing. So what the heck, we'll just pump her up through drugs, bill it, and try and figure out what we're doing. And what the heck, she's gone. And
that's the key. The key word there was billing.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with that. Is if you look at the disposition of Medicare, Medi-Cal, et cetera, over 60% of it is billed in the last year of someone's life. And unless hospitals and other people basically treat geriatric patients in this fashion, they can't pay their bills. So without an older population in the hospital, which is what they call it, They can't really make ends meet. Hospitals, by the way, Simon, put out these statistics weekly, almost daily, and they know the number of seniors, number of Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, patients, and they cater to doctors depending upon their philosophy to put patients in the hospital like that. For years, they rewarded them in ways that are now illegal, but I know for a fact, having viewed these for endlessly for clients, that I have a client, for example, who at times has as much as probably 32% census in a hospital. When he speaks, they listen, because he's generating such a huge amount of money on a daily basis that they literally cannot function in the hospital without him. That's a sad camp commentary, too, isn't it?
Horrifying.
Yes, it is.
And one of the things that we started off talking about, where we're early on, was we were talking about pesticides with the GMO, mm-hmm. and how, you know, farmers, apparently when GMO was introduced, farmers applied about 318 million more pounds of pesticides compared to prior to the GMO. That's just a known statistic that's out there. And then as the superweeds occurred, I had a dumb moment this last week, and that dumb moment hit me really, really hard. I'm going, well, okay, so the pesticides are now, I mean, the weeds and everything are resistant to it. So what are they putting on the crops that we're now eating? Well, they have a thing that's very toxic, that's even more toxic than what we were discussing, the glyphosate, which is the, I think it's called paraquate 2,4-D or something. It's a compound that was used in the defoliant Asian orange. So they're now using compounds because the GM crops are so resistant that now this pesticide is being added to what people are now eating over their crops and into their food and their daily food. And, of course, you can't see it, so I guess it doesn't count. And then you're mixing this up with your, you know, daily compounds of the drugs people are taking. And it's just, it's a chemical, you become a chemical wasteland. I think what you did was brilliant with, you know, putting on the elimination diet for your mom and doing what you did, the caring of, you know, removing what you had to get her body clean, because the body will rejuvenate.
Yes, even in her 80s, even in her 80s it did, and she lived to be 87. So that's, you know, it's not, it's never too late. So if somebody tells you, oh, that person's 80 years old, you should let them eat what they want. It's okay. Who cares? You can have ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with RBGH hormone. Who cares? It's not okay, because you're depriving yourself and that a loved one of a few extra years.
That's exactly right. You're absolutely right.
And Barbara, to give an example of what Ash is talking about, we were horrified while we were researching to find out that you take something simple like apples. Conventionally grown apples right now are sprayed as much as 39 times before they go to the market because they're having so much problems with them. And the fact is, when Ashley talks about Roundup Ready, we should probably define that for our audience. Roundup Ready means that Monsanto has added and split a gene. Usually it's a cauliflower mosaic virus, which is used primarily with GMO soy and corn. Although E. coli is used to split other ones, as well as the BT toxin. Well, actually, the BT toxin is the one that's used primarily right now with the corn and soil. And what it does is allegedly gets into every strand of DNA in the plant and allows it to protect itself from the effects of these various pesticides. So the term Roundup Ready actually came to mean that once this plant is genetically modified, it's ready for use for the Roundup pesticides made by Monsanto so that they don't affect the plant. Well, it's turned out that that's not true, that it doesn't protect the plant the way Monsanto says it does. And in reality is that it takes sometimes 6-7 times as much pesticides, in this case Roundup, to make it work. Well, Roundup is essentially what our government purchased from Monsanto to defoliate Colombia to try and get rid of the Colombian coca plants and stop cocaine. And if you look at any of the information out of there, which is available in Congress because there were huge congressional hearings over it, you'll find that it destroyed everything in the area. It killed people. It caused cancer. It affected the indigenous people in ways that have never been able to correct. And basically, the Colombian government, as well as El Salvador and Guatemala, hate the United States and hate Monsanto. And in some instances, Monsanto can't do business in some of these countries because of it.
Well, you know, something interesting I learned from Dr. Huber was that the way these glyphosate works, and I wasn't aware of this, but he stated that what the glyphosate does is it doesn't just outright kill. What it does is it causes the it blocks the nutrient uptake. It blocks the ability of the plant to be healthy or the bug. So okay, the bug comes, takes a bite, and it restricts that bug's ability to fight off other pathogens. So it's not the glyphosate that actually kills. It's the other pathogens that kill, because the glyphosate has caused that bug to be deficient, and it breaks down the barriers. So he stated that 80% of the pesticide is retained inside the plant. What is that doing?
Well, one of the things that Monsanto has claimed for years is that this breaks down once it goes back in the soil, and recent tests have shown that's not true. It doesn't break down, and it just stays forever. And by the way, Dr. Huber, for our listeners, is a retired professor at University of Purdue, a distinguished man in the Midwest whose reputation's impeccable, who did tests for Monsanto for years, and he, after retiring, released information, I believe it was in February this year, that indicated the dangers of GMO. And, of course, ever since then, Monsanto's been trying to discredit him, which is very difficult because his reputation is such that even though Monsanto thinks people may believe them when they say that he was always difficult for them, which means he probably told the truth and didn't want to hear it. The fact is that he's an impeccable source, and what he publishes as close to true as you're ever going to find.
Exactly. And another thing that I found out about glyphosate is that Yeah, it's interesting. Not only does it just contain the glyphosate, which reacts in that manner, but glyphosate contains something, is generally contaminated with something called polyoxyethylene, A-L-K-Y-L-A-M-I-N-E. I don't know how to pronounce that. And this is, actually somebody in 1999 had to do a Freedom of Information request before these inert ingredients were allowed to be, you know, shown, and they gave it to them and said, okay, here they are, because inert ingredients don't have to be on any label. Well, the study, this was on Monroe, let's see, it was a person called Monroe on Vision. That's a glyphosate product by Monsanto. It contained dioxane, not dioxin, but dioxane at a level of 350 parts per million. And dioxane is a carcinogenic. It damages the liver, kidney, brain, and lungs. And according to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, the permissible exposure for dioxane is 100 parts per million.
Yeah, I'm
so not only are we getting the glyphosate, we're getting this POEA, this polyethylene.
Right, and of course, as we said, there's no test. When somebody gets sick, there's no test when they go to the hospital. Other than saying, gee, we can't find anything wrong with you, and they're still eating the same food that made them sick, will continue to make them not feel so good, and then cripple their insides because the body can't heal itself. The body will rejuvenate, and it cannot heal itself, and all you're doing is adding more damage every time you take a bite of this food that contains these products.
Well, mm-hmm. It's also back to my point that the problem with doctors is they're buying into the corporate Kool-Aid, and they won't do anything to buck the major corporations because the consequences for them are so horribly severe. I mean, they can get run out of hospitals. They have to be very, very careful. So most of them don't want to comment if they do understand, but the problem is that most of them only get their information from the basic drug manufacturers, and this, you cannot separate the big pharma members from the big food members. In many cases, they own companies in each one. At one time, Monsanto owned Pfizer. I mean, when you take a look at the what I call the inbreeding, the incest between these corporations, it's amazing any level of truth is released. And throw in the politics and the rest of the lobbying, the Americans have to literally mine for information like miners did for gold a century or two ago. So, and I know that may sound cynical if you're a first-time listener, but if you read all of our blogs and our upcoming book, The Food Revolution Papers, which is coming out in September, we chronicle all this and provide all the background, including tests that show that even modern tests that are done on foods are basically not correct. Most of them are falsified, or the what Ashley describes as abstracts are just done to deceive people. So, Ashley, you want to throw anything on that?
The abstract is a summary. And so the summary, the scientists may actually do the studies, and then the abstract itself is done by, oftentimes, by a ghostwriter who's hired by the company or as an advertising company. So they're just writers who will sum it up to make a gleaming report when the fact is that the actual event gets missed. And did you read by any chance about how in Canada the Genuity Smart Stacks is now being put up in Canada and that it's in the process, it's been approved?
Barbara, you aware of that?
I think I've read a little bit about that. It kind of blew by me a little bit, though. I'd like to know more about that, and I'm going to be finding that out. Thank you.
It's going to get worse. So go ahead, Manny.
SmartStax is a combination of three different forms of GMOs put into one in three different areas so they can get maximum coverage at one time.
They do three below for bug killing, and I think it's five above. So they've added more genes that will kill the bugs above and below ground into the genetic makeup of the gene, of the plant itself.
I joke.
As I understand it, I mean, they're only fiddling with bits of the DNA that don't involve life.
That's right.
Don't involve your life, maybe.
They're involving your life if you're saying you're getting sick.
You You know, what bothers me more is the constant position of the U.S. government that all this stuff is what they call GRAS. G-R-A-S is the shortcut for generally regarded as safe. And I want to know generally regarded by whom, because this stuff is far from safe. And
by Monsanto.
Of course. And the problem here, as we point out, is Monsanto is in a partnership with the United States government on a number of patents. And in fact, we wrote a blog in the last few days about how U.S. government, IBM, and who is the other one in the project right now?
Mars
Candy Bars. Mars, who makes the obvious candy bars, are in a partnership now to provide genetically modified chocolate that instead of taking 6 years to get to market, will get to market in a year or so under government-paid grants. So here we are with the government funding and creating GMOs, because every time you see the Monsanto's given a grant or partial grant to finance studies involving their products, understand those are matching grants, and the rest of that money comes from a federal source. So basically our government is paying a significant amount of money to get GMOs manufactured and put on the market, and at the same time claim that they have some level of objectivity about it. It's not so, is it?
No, they're putting it on the fast track, too. That I can't remember what it was in the Federal Register. I'm not sure if it was corn or rice, or I'm not sure which one it was, but where Monsanto has now applied for deregulation of a new product, either corn or rice or something like that, and they just want to go straight. Who cares about environmental impact statements? We don't even want to bother doing that. Even though we can do our own, we don't want to bother doing that. Let's just go straight for deregulation and just bypass everything because it's all good, it's all safe, and there's no difference.
That's right. And we have really, really good independent researchers.
Well,
I love that,
Simon.
They're just getting a paycheck from us, that's all.
Yeah. Barbara, I have really wondered what's going to happen in the alfalfa litigation when Monsanto tries to go back to court and said, okay, we've tested it ourselves and we don't see any problem. And I'm going to be interested to see how the courts handle the fact that Monsanto has probably conducted its own tests on the alfalfa.
Okay, before you answer that, Barbara, we were talking off-air about alfalfa, and the interesting situation that Monsanto can sue a farmer should another farmer accidentally let his alfalfa flower and contaminate the non-Monsanto alfalfa field. But do you want to spin back and talk a little bit about that?
Well, we were talking about that field that I went by as I was going shopping, and we've got hundreds upon hundreds of acres here planted with alfalfa. I mean, this is an alfalfa belt, and they ship to Japan and everywhere. So the thing is, I was looking at this field, and it's all flowered, okay, because a lot of what will happen is if they want more sweetness in the alfalfa, they'll allow it to flower, and then you get a sweeter alfalfa, and they do that for some applications. Now, what is in the technology use agreement specifically states that you are to cut this alfalfa before it flowers, so there will be no spreading. So we're going to guarantee that there's no spreading because everybody's told to cut it before it flowers. And, I mean, just imagine this. Here's all this. We all know that these things flower all at the same time, right? So what are they going to do? They're going to have an inspector with a little magnifying glass out there inspecting 100 acres of an alfalfa field, looking for the one plant that flowered a bit early so they can go ahead and, cut everything down. How absurd are we getting here? It's not possible to do that. It's not possible. So the contamination is going to be a real issue.
Well,
okay, and as I understand it, you also can't use it for sprouting purposes, according to the Monsanto agreement.
Yeah, no sprouting, which is very, that struck me as really odd. So, of course, I had to do some investigation, and I called people, and I wanted to know. I called Forage Genetics. I said, why no sprouting? And they said, well, we don't buy, nobody produces alfalfa for human consumption in the United States. That's all bought in Canada. So I called Mum's Organic Sprouts in Canada, very popular place, and she said, well, no, we get our sprouts. If we can't find them, if something happens to our crop or something in Canada, then we go to the United States, and yes, we can get our organic sprouts in the United States. And I said, well, okay, maybe that's just for organics. So I called Park Seeds, which is United States-based, and they have conventional alfalfa sprouting seeds. So I said, where do you get your conventional alfalfa sprouting seeds? Is it from Canada? And he said, well, no, it's from the United States. I said, okay, well, what's going on? So I'm back here with the guy from Forage Genetics, and I said, look, because these are the guys that actually are doing the alfalfa. And I said, how is this? You know, is there something on the seed? Is there a seed coating? He said, well, there can be. There can be either a coating, which they don't have to give the ingredients on because it's inert, and it's put on by the processors and the people that are going to actually distribute and sell the seed. And that coating can have, you know, vitamins, minerals, or whatever the plant needs. But they don't tell you the ingredients. They're all inert. Now, there's also, they can put on a fungicide on it so that the fungicide will keep the seed viable and it won't rot in the ground. Now, I've never seen an alfalfa seed rot in the ground, but what the heck. And they can put, and the fungicide is produced, most of it is produced by Bayer, and it's toxic. So I thought, well, let's see. Obviously, not all seeds, if this stuff is put on the seed after it's manufactured, and then it goes through that process, you could quite conceivably say, I don't want that stuff on my seeds, don't put it on. So why no sprouting? So I asked Susan Bardosh, and she's our Pod Pussy's wife and partner, and I asked her, I said, Susan, why? And she said, well, you know, I said, could it possibly be that since sprouts are full of concentrated nutrition, that it could also be full of maybe a concentration of the transgenic material? And she said that is possible. So my only conclusion after elimination of all these other factors is it is possible that since they're specifically saying no sprouting, could what, eat a sprout and drop dead, and then the doctors will be able to make the connection, and Monsanto might have some liability, or Forage Genetics, which is partnered with Monsanto, could have some liability for this thing. So now they're putting in the caveat of saying no sprouting because they want to cover their assets. It's not for our health, of course, because they really don't care if we drop dead. They've demonstrated that. So it must be for some other reason. And my only way of thinking, the way I, you know, think, I could be wrong, but the way I think is, hey, eat a sprout, drop dead. I don't know. I'm not going to eat one. Especially, you know, GMO, I'll eat an organic sprout. They're wonderful for you. But if this has a concentration of the transgenic material, what are we looking at? We're looking at a contamination because of all, even the organic alfalfa sprouts, which alfalfa seeds, which are then grown for sprouting. So now we're going to have this stuff that the technology use agreement states specifically do not sprout. We're going to have that contamination in our sprouts and going to be eating it.
Right, so you can't sprout it, and you can't let it flower. I mean,
right.
Excuse me, that there's something wrong with this picture.
I think there's another factor that we're missing too, and that is that it's very, very possible, if not probable, that it would also prove that basically these are not sterile products, because one of the things, the claims that they've made is that basically these are sterile and you're going to have to buy the products every year. But as time goes on, it's pretty clear that if you can contaminate a field right around the corner from you, you're not sterile. So that is, I think, an argument that is really dangerous to them, because once people are able to prove that these basic seedlings, if they sprout, can then be picked up by bees and other things and cross-pollinate, as they have done in Canada, then I think you have to deal with the reality that, guess what, GMOs cannot be controlled, as we've all been pointing out. Go ahead, Ashley.
And the bee population, as we know, when they eat the GMO, as well as some of the insects around the GMO crops, are dying. So you're going to have massive alfalfa fields to add to this death of the bees, and then you're not going to have pollination. Lack of pollination means we're really in big problems.
And think of the honey. Yeah,
that's right.
And there's been a lot of concern about why, over the last few years, the honeybees are in danger. So, I wonder if this might be a reason, right?
My way of thinking, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's too logical for them. I mean, you can't make this kind of logical argument to Monsanto, because they just go crazy over it. It's like, oh, no, can't be. And that's their answer to everything. It doesn't exist. It's like the emperor's new clothes. If they keep saying it long enough, maybe people will really believe the emperor does have new clothes.
And it is frightening, Manny, with the new gene stacks that they're doing. And it's very, very frightening, because they're adding more and more and more of genes that are for killing bugs above ground as well as below. I mean, I know I said that before, but it also goes back to the pollinization with the bees, as well as the insects that are needed within the soil, when needed within the plant itself, to keep it healthy and to keep the environment and ecosystem working.
Well, and I want to add one last thing. And again, it's a business thing that I look at as a businessman and a lawyer throughout my life. If you have a product that you want to sell, you're going to find a reason to sell it. And in this particular case, they have to find a reason to sell GMOs. And they spend all of their time looking for some way to sell GMOs and to add more of the products, because their sole goal is to sell chemicals, chemicals, and more chemicals. So every solution they're going to offer is going to be chemical-based. And that is just the insanity of it all. So every solution you're ever going to hear from them revolves in some way about them providing you chemicals.
And, you know, the interesting thing about alfalfa is 93% approximately of the alfalfa that is grown requires no pesticide.
Absolutely.
That's the one that gets me. What is the point of this other than to make money for the companies and for USDA? And I just think it's a horrible thing they're allowing to happen to people. It's actually,
you know what Forage Genetics said?
Pardon?
You know what Forage Genetics said about it? Because I asked them. Forage Genetics said that your first stand is very important with alfalfa, so you want the healthiest and biggest and thickest and fullest stand that you can get, because that will last for, 6 to 7 years, and there's no way, just the way the alfalfa roots are, that you can go in if there's a bare spot and then plant some. It doesn't work that way. You can't do it. So, you get your first stand out. So they said, now you go ahead and get a wonderful first stand, and you apply your Roundup to this first stand of alfalfa, then you're good. And that's their whole selling point. Never mind that 93% they don't need it, and everybody does just fine without it. That's their selling point.
What is alfalfa used for? Maybe for those listeners who don't know, I'd like them to hear what the alfalfa is, so they understand how extensive alfalfa is in our life.
Every single thing that you eat that comes from a cow, that cow has probably, in the United States, been fed alfalfa.
Okay.
It's going to be in your milk, your cheese, your meat, everything, your fertilizer. So it's so everything. Alfalfa is the staple here for animal feed, livestock feed.
So essentially it affects every piece of dairy that's sold in the market. It affects hamburgers. It affects every single thing that basically is. So what we're talking about is a method of adding a product that's based upon basically pesticides to the food that America eats every day.
Yes.
Okay? And that's the point that you're right, actually. We just don't make often enough that what we're doing here is fighting for our food source, not just for us, but every American, and particularly the one that irritates me the most, is that we're feeding our children this. And we need to stop and ask ourselves why we have all this autism and we have all these other illnesses, childhood illnesses, increased diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer is always going to be you are what you eat, and if you eat this kind of food, then you are going to be sick. And that's the bottom line.
Okay, even if there's no testing, just understand if you it's in the food. If you're sick, look at the food you're eating. You know, as Barbara's saying, as we're saying in our books, start your own elimination-style diet. One by one by one, you will find the things that are making you sick.
I'm not like you, Ashley. I don't have, an entire rainforest of statistics in front of me. But I seem to recall reading a horrible statistic about the increase in autism over the past 20 years. I can't remember if it was a subject that we discussed or if it was on another project, but it's horrific. You know, autism has gone from being, oh, there's a strange kid in this town, to it being one in 100 children, or maybe more.
You know what? I don't have that statistic in front of me, Simon, and I will have it for Saturday's show because it is a very important issue.
Well, let
and
me address it then, Ashley, because we have written about it, and what the information I'm getting is out of It's Not Your Fault, our latest book that came out in January. And basically what's happened is that this increase was first claimed to be genetic, and in recent days a variety of tests have been released and are available that say what our position is, that this is really environmental. And a lot of the various journals, and it's published in one of the nutrition journals, complained that, oh, it wasn't well-founded. And what they did is reviewed tests of over 6,000 patients and a variety, and I think there were something like 20 different basic studies they covered and went through. And they're proving basically our point. It's called, the proof is in the pudding type of research. The amount of autism was relatively unheard of and unknown in this country until the last 20 years, and it has increased numerically since that time. And why has it increased? There can only be one difference, environmental changes, and those changes primarily around food, although there could be chemical reactions. And people say, well, how come only a certain number of people? Well, they may be genetically predisposed to it. That's one good reason.
And
why.
And when the baby was being carried, what was mom eating, which no one really gets a list of? If they had a list of that, and every pregnant mom in the country right now started pulling out books and writing down everything they ate, they could correlate that between what has happened to their child. In addition to, the moment that child is born, what have they been feeding it? What's in that food? What's in the baby food? What's in the milk coming out of the mom's breast based on the food? And a lot of it is the autism can be tied back to pesticides are going to lower IQ. What do you think neurologically it's doing and the damage it's doing within that child, within the fetus?
Yeah. And,
exactly.
That's going to be proved more and more. When we first wrote that, people said, oh, you guys don't know what you're talking about. That's crazy. It's this, it's that. But I guarantee you, every test that comes out in the next few years is going to support that position. And all you have to do is study a little bit about how children are born, something that most people don't do anymore.
40 weeks. Just look at the 40 weeks
and
take a look at it.
And take a look at what that fetus goes through to develop its kidney, its liver, et cetera, and then consider what the mother eats and how that content affects the child. I think the numbers of the situation is just scary, and most people don't realize how vulnerable that fetus is. So.
And the baby. The baby's not completely neurologically developed until they're 3 to 4 years old. So the baby's continually growing, and with that growing are the neurological aspects of that child. So subsequently, you know, it's what that you're feeding that child from that day forward is how they are going to develop. And no, Simon, I don't have the statistic in front of me for what the autism number is, and I will pull that for Saturday, but it's a very frightening issue right now.
And we're actually way over. You know, Barbara, we could just talk for hours with you because there's so much to say. And I'd wanted to get into Europe. We never got there. So guess what? We're gonna call you up in the next few weeks and find some more time, because every time you talk, I think our listeners will learn something, and that's our goal. And I think you're doing a fabulous job of educating Americans on how to improve their health and how to stand up for their rights. And we applaud you for it, and we hope you continue to do this for as long as you can.
As long as I breathe.
Good for you. You have any final thoughts, Simon?
Well, Barbara, I think you deserve a little bit of shameless promotion. One more time, your website is?
Farmwars.info.
Now, Barbara, I love you when you're being shameless. It's very, very becoming.
So that's Farm Wars, correct?
Yeah, Farm okay. Wars, yeah, WARS.info.
Thank you.
Right, and a little bit of shameless promotion from Manny and Ashley.
I thought we already did that. Our main site is howtoeliminatepain.com. Our blogs can be read on Blogger News Net, the station you listen to. And if you have any questions, go to our site, look at our email, and send us a note. We respond to everybody, and we'll try to help anybody who has a question. And Ashley, do you have any final thoughts?
I just want to thank you, Barbara, for coming back, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again. And again, we didn't get to a lot of things we wanted to with the various countries and things that are happening in South America and Africa and various countries that are actually impacting our food and our way of life.
Mm-hmm. We can do that another time.
Looking forward to it.
Well, anyway, have a great day, and thank you, listeners. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We will be back again on Saturday with our sister program, Surviving the 21st Century, and the Food Revolution Papers will pick up again next Thursday, same time, same channel. Till then, goodbye.